Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this podcast journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello. Wow, that was very dramatic today. That's very like, wow. You were giving it that extra professional polish, I think. It was good.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Giving a little extra for the new year.
I zhuzhed it up.
Yeah, you did. You totally zhuzhed.
I gave a little zhuzh. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. All right. So this week, our episode is Deadlock.
Deadlock. I know the title. We had a lot of D titles. Dreadnought. I don't know. I feel like we had a lot of D titles. I feel like out of all the letters in all the letters in the alphabet, we had more D titles than any other letter. I'm going to call D the winner.
Are you saying that D is sort of like the favorite child when it comes to writers
of titles for Voyager? I'm gonna just off the cuff say yes. I'm gonna put that out there to the fans. Let's see if D is actually the winner of the most titles that start with a D.
Or well, now you've put we'll see. You've put the homework assignment out there. Now someone's gonna do it. You know, someone's gonna go through and just tally.
I want to know which letter wins.
Okay,
winners and losers are part of our games we play here. So all right, let's see what letter is the winner.
Which letter is the preferred beginning letter of all Voyager?
I'm gonna go with
episode
D
titles. You're going with D. I'm gonna say I'm gonna go with M.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I chose that because
maneuvers. I'm trying to think of some
McNeil.
That's not a title.
Are you sure?
No, not a title.
Okay. Maneuvers is one, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
D, you're saying that. D. We'll see. Yeah, it could be. No, I'm going to give you one more letter. D and what else? Give one more. Give one more.
I want D.
You only want D?
I'm a hard D on this one.
Okay. Because I was going to say M and P.
You can have two if you want. That's all right.
I'll take two.
M and P.
Okay. All right. So, hey, let's go watch this episode.
Yeah? Let's go watch it. I'm excited.
We're going to watch it. We'll come back and we'll let you guys know what we think.
We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Whoa. Back.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa. That was an action-packed. I have to admit, this may be one of my favorite episodes we've watched so far.
I told you.
Hands down. It's a really great episode of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. It's emotionally moving. I thought it was really, really good all around. The biggest kind of stuff we've done on the ship ever so far. With the collapsing and fire blowing and it was cool. It was really exciting. It was fun.
Yeah. And you remember from at the end of last episode, I said, and next week we'll be reviewing one of my favorite episodes, Deadlock.
That's right.
Oh, really?
I know. Really? Deadlock. Yeah. Okay.
And now you know why. There you go. All right. So I'm going to start by saying that as we do with everything, we always do our little synopsis in the beginning.
Yes.
And when I was talking to Megan about, okay, I've got to do my haiku, she came up with one for me. I have my own one, but then she has one too.
Okay.
And I must preface it by saying that it plays on the fact that there's that joke about how you talk about the pad, P-A-D-D. Exactly. So... All right.
By the way, I think that is the stupidest joke of any of our casts that I ever made. Because there's two D's at the end of personal something display device or something.
Yeah. Yeah. You gave it an extra two.
Yeah, I used to always, I would always, with this totally straight face, go, oh, yeah, hand me the pad. And people just found it charming and funny, and it became a thing that I always did. But it's not funny. It's the stupidest dad joke. The pad. Anyway.
But it's important for Megan's, Megan's haiku that she wrote for me. Okay. Yes. And it goes like this.
Yes.
Okay.
Ready.
Ready? Here we go. Remember, haiku, 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables. So, okay. I died, and no one, hold on, and no one cared,
Oh, wow.
I know.
Wow.
That's a good haiku. It is.
That's a really good. Yeah, and that like outdoes my pad. Like, wow, that totally beats pad.
Well, the initial one was I died and no one cared. And then she said cries. And I said, well, what about, let's find something other than cries, like crying or cried. And then she said, how about sob? Which is kind of cute.
It's very funny.
Yeah, because you're sobbing. So it works well. Okay, no, here's the real one. Here's the real
one. Where's your haiku?
Let me prepare. Okay, I'm ready. Ship splits into two. Okay. The Deans attack one ship. Harry saves baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Short and sweet. All right.
I love the haiku. I love the haiku. I'm actually starting to write some haikus as a daily fun practice. I journal every day.
Yeah.
Pretty much every day. So I've added a little haiku, not about Star Trek. I'm just starting to do my own haikus. And it's really fun. Actually, I'm going to digress into haikus for a minute. REM, the band, and Michael Stipe, the lead singer, is one of my favorite bands, one of my favorite singers in the world. And back in 97, I think, I found out that Michael Stipe and 6 of his friends, Tom Gilroy, a playwright and filmmaker, and a number of other people, they made a pact to write each other haikus every day for a year. And so they all 7 of these friends did that for a year. They wrote each other haikus. And they ended up at the end of the year with this collection of amazing haikus that sort of captured where they were in the world at that moment in time. And they ended up publishing a book 10 years later with all these haikus that I just got a copy of for Christmas. Rebecca got me a copy. And I am just loving it. I love reading it and that whole story that they did the haikus. So yes, this Voyager haiku synopsis has sort of, you know, catapulted me into the world of haiku lately. So thank you for that. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, haiku is really, I mean, the traditional format is 5 syllable, 7 syllable, 5 syllable. But when you actually posted an Instagram post from the book that you, REM haiku book, haiku can also take other forms where it doesn't have to adhere to 5-7-5. It could be 3-3-5. It could be 3-4-4. So really, it's just simplifying the message, right? Just boiling it down to the essence. And since you are now doing that in your journal, maybe we're going to start a trend to the point where this is how we actually communicate with each other. We'll just start speaking in haiku to each other on a regular basis.
Some simplicity and poetry in life would be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my limerick. Synopsis. The classic Irish limerick synopsis for Voyager's this episode. Here we go. And by the way, yes, Rebecca did help me with this. I would say
percentage?
Yeah, I was about to say 50-50, but no, this is like 80-20 in her favor.
80-20 Rebecca?
Yeah, oh my this God. One.
Yeah. All right. Well, Robbie, go ahead and drop it like it's hot. Let's hear it.
Here we go. Plasma split the Voyager in two. Far away into space, Harry flew. One baby survived. Self-destruct, both Janeways surmised. Not a second to spare. Harry lives anew.
Wow! I want you to give Rebecca 2 pats on the back for that.
2 pats.
Yes.
It's the 2 pats up.
That's a 2 pats limerick.
Plasma split the Voyager in two.
Whew. That's great. I really like that one. Yeah. That's really, really good.
Yeah, you get to do limericks in season three.
I know. I know. I'm really I'm really regretting. I'm regretting even bringing this up. I did it as a buddy thing. I thought, you know what? I'm going to help you out. I know you're stressed about it. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe I might defer. Maybe I will actually have to, as I'm coming up with a limerick, I may also have to message Rebecca for help. So.
You may. Get Megan, Rebecca, anybody. Call Michael Skype from REM. Yeah. I don't know. Whoever you want. It's a team effort, the limerick. It's a complicated little thing.
It truly is. Okay. Let's just start out by writer and director, right? Written by Brandon Braga, directed by Mr. David Livingston.
Very well directed by David Livingston. I have to say, this episode was really well directed, particularly with the two Kesses, the two Janeways, the two casts, entirely different ships. Like, it took a lot of planning and a lot of very detailed thought.
This could have been a disaster. It could have been muddy and it could have been confusing, but the pacing on it was amazing. It truly was. It just kept you on the edge of the seat the entire time. You're like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? So good job to David Livingston, and good
David
job
Livingston
to Brandon Braga.
And Brandon Braga. Great episode.
Uh-huh. Yep. All right. So we start in, we're on the bridge. Actually, is that the very first scene in the bridge?
No, we're in the mess hall. The very first scene.
Sorry.
We're in the mess hall. And, Wildman is in there and Neelix says, hey, one of my burners has gone out. There's been some sort of power problem. Could you help take a look at this? And so they're kind of chatting, and then she goes into labor in the mess hall. And then we see her beginning her labor, and there's the doctor. We're in the sick bay. And then we go to the bridge, and I love how Paris seems very upset. He's like very agitated. And then he's like, it's been over 7 hours. How long does it take to have a baby? He seems very, very invested. And then we realize the whole crew is invested in Wildman's baby, because this is the first baby born on the ship. And so that was a fun moment for all of us up on the bridge, that everybody's really invested in this.
It was. And just to go back to the mess hall, you did miss the little bit about them saying that Harry was supposed to come and help out with that diagnostic or whatever, but he wasn't, but he was late. This was hours ago and he hasn't come down yet. So this is, maybe some reference to Harry Kim being so overworked that he doesn't have time to do everything.
He's got to relax. Harry has got to relax.
Okay. So back on the bridge, Paris, Paris's hair looks extra swirly today.
It did. Yeah. I agree with you. That? It looks sort of poofed up, some hairspray going on. Yeah. Well, hair, as we know on Voyager, hair tells a lot of the story for us. I made a note later on, as the ship starts having all of its problems, we know things are serious, because Janeway, the bun is starting to fall apart and her hair is getting a little wild. And that's how you know that things are getting bad, if Janeway's hair is askew. So swirly hair tells the story.
Yes, it does. This could have been, instead of Star Trek Voyager, this could have been Star Trek Harriger, or just hair. Star Trek hair, hair.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Star Trek colon hair.
Hair, colon coif. How we can put a little Frenchness into it. Okay. Colon coif. Quaff. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Lots of hair. Okay. I did like that Chakotay says, as my father used to always say, home is wherever you happen to be. I was waiting for Chakotay. Oh. When Chakotay always has these moments of my people have a saying.
Yes.
And then he comes out with, Akuchimoya or some, something deep and wise. And he's like, my father used to always say,
yeah,
home is wherever you happen to be. I was like, what? That's it? Yeah. Okay. Home is wherever you happen to be.
Shall we begin to refer to those as Chakotayisms?
Yes, I think so. I love
Chakotayism.
He's always quoting people. There's somebody, people of my people, people have a saying. My father always said he's a quoter. That's a big part of his thing.
Now, Paris, it's you. It's your decision. It's your suggestion that we must enter a large plasma drift in order to block Voyager from the sensors of the Vidians.
I wrote Smarty. You say, Paris is
You came
or maybe not. Maybe he's not a Smarty.
maybe not if we didn't so smart.
Go in that plasma drift.
We wouldn't be in the situation to begin with.
Yeah,
right?
Sorry. Maybe. Sorry. So basically, Paris killed Harry. That's what you're saying. I get where you're going with it.
I'm feeling that a little bit. But you not only killed him, but then you really, it resulted in him being saved as well, right? Yes. In the long run.
True.
Because, and now here's my question to you. Which Voyager was the original Voyager? Because I don't think they make any mention to it. You don't really know which one is. Am I right or am I totally off the
bat? I think they're both real. It's funny because Rebecca and I got into this conversation because part of my limerick was going to be which Voyager is true. But she was like, they're both true. They're both the real Voyager. There's not one that's real and one that's not. They are both split into two. They're just slightly out of phase, but it was doubled. There's not a real and a copy. There are two reels.
I felt that the field that they went through, what do they call that? A divergence field. I can't remember exactly what they said, but the field that they went through caused Voyager to duplicate itself. That's what I felt. Like you're saying that it just split immediately, that there is no original and then a duplicate. It's just two originals now.
That's what I think. Yeah. I think I think as an audience member and as a crew member on one or the other, you would have to ask the question, well, am I the real thing or am I the copy? But I think from a distance, you look at it and there's not one that is more real than the other. In a weird way, I would almost say that if you had to pick one, because they were both, the reason they were, that one was collapsing and the other wasn't, is because they were both trying to draw energy off of the same engine, basically, right? They were, antimatter did not duplicate.
Right, only the matter duplicated.
Matter duplicated the antimatter, so the engine itself, the energy within the engine didn't duplicate. So, I mean, if you had to say one is true and one is a copy or one is real, one's a copy, the one that had the engine that was working would seem, since it was working before, to be the right one.
And, okay.
And the copy is the one that can't pull the antimatter because the antimatter didn't.
Yeah. The one that's breaking down, the one that was in disarray.
If you had to say one is the copy. Yes. You would have to say that that's the copy.
Right. So if you're looking at it that way, then Kim and Baby Wildman are the only two real ones left. Everyone else is a copy.
I would say that if you had to pick, if you're forced to take that position, then then I think that's true. Harry and Baby Wildman are the only two originals. Everyone else was the duplicate.
Yeah.
I think they were both real. I think they were both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've struggled with this for many years because at the various conventions I've attended worldwide, I've often experienced interactions with fans worldwide that say the same thing. How's it feel being the duplicate? How's it feel being the copy? Like they keep saying that
I don't think you're the copy. I don't think Harry is the copy. I think he's just as original as the other crew. But if you had to make an argument, I actually think he's the original. Everybody else is the copy.
Yeah. Well,
because of the antimatter. If you just take who got the antimatter,
who had the antimatter
didn't duplicate.
Right.
So
that's true. So I've been the brunt of many jokes. People say, well, that's the reason why you were never promoted because you were the duplicate. You're not the real one. You're the real one gets promoted and he's dead, you know? No. So that's, but now no. I guess we've come to the decision or the understanding.
At least
that
the Delta Flyers position is if we have to pick duplicates or originals, Harry's the only original.
Harry's the only original with the baby.
That's the Delta Flyers official position as an organization. I will state that unequivocally. By the way,
will you release that in a memo to the rest of the Delta Flyers team, please?
The Delta, yes. The whole team will be getting the memo. Emails will be sent, copies. Legal briefs, all of it.
Yeah. CC it.
There was another thing. They say, Vidian ships on the sensors before we go into the plasma drift. They said something like over 20 of them, over 20 ships.
Yeah.
Well, where were the 20 ships later on? There was just one big giant ship. Like, I don't know.
That
bugged me.
Okay,
I saw the Vidians, I'm like, where's the army of all those ships we talked about?
Yes, but the one thing that you didn't incorporate into your argument here is that they also in sensors detected planets that were basically occupied or, they were Vidian planets in the Vidian system. So therefore, those ships just could have been ships just kind of cruising around. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, like they weren't they weren't in the middle of space on a mission, right? So they could have just said, oh, there's 20 ships in this direction. And that's where that's how I validate.
All right.
So don't lose any sleep over that, please.
I'm not going to let it bug me. I'm not going to let it bug me.
All right, good.
All right, so Wildman's in labor. The baby shifts around and the exocranial ridges lodge into the uterine wall.
Ouch.
Dude, I almost turned the thing off at that point. I was like, I can't stop talking about the exocranial ridges in the uterus. It sounds like painful. And then they go, let's do a fetal transport. And I'm like, actually, Rebecca was like, wait a minute, what? Why didn't they just do a fetal transport from the beginning save her all of that pain? Even if the exocranial ridges don't get lodged, why wouldn't you just automatically do the fetal transport? Like, do it in the first place. Anyway.
Well, yeah, but then again, I think Samantha Wildman knew what she signed up for. The minute you start a relationship with a Katarian, you're going to, and you have you're going to have an exocranial ridge that's going to dig into your, So these are issues.
I don't want to think about it. I don't even have a uterus. I don't have a uterus. I'm not even sure.
But if you were to have one, I think you are. Yeah, but if you had one, you'd be shuddering right now.
I would. And I am shuddering, and I don't even know what it is. But I know it's a lady parts, and things get... ridges getting jammed in there? No, thank you.
Yeah.
Whew. By the way, painful. I hate it when so the baby comes out or they do the fetal transport or whatever. And then we see a baby with the makeup on, the prosthetics. And I hate it when we did that because we actually did that. Like we put prosthetics on, 6 week old babies or 4 week, whatever. We got very, very young babies. And I don't know. I always felt bad. I would get so uncomfortable. We'd put whenever we had baby things and they'd put the
prosthetics
on, and then a lot of times they would add like this mixture of like cottage cheese and pudding or something to be like birth fluids, and I just felt so bad for these poor little babies. They didn't know. They didn't sign up for this. They didn't want to be actors. They're like 4 weeks old.
Do you think that actually scars these infants for lives?
Of course,
for
their life. Of course, it does.
In a way,
and they're going to hate Star Trek for the rest of their lives because of it.
Or at least, when they're an adult, if someone, they get into a relationship and their significant other says, "I've got cottage cheese, I want to put on your body," they're going to like, that'll be a big trigger. See what I'm saying? So maybe that's where they're scarred.
If someone wanted to put cottage cheese on my body, I wouldn't like it. And I wasn't even in a sci-fi show as an infant. I just wouldn't like it. So we're back on the bridge and I forget what happened, but I wrote this note down. Paris goes, "What the hell?" And I love when Paris gets to curse. What the hell?
Oh,
we never get to curse on the show.
Yeah.
And I just,
what were you saying that to?
I don't remember. I think I can't remember.
Oh, well, my next note is back in the sick bay and the doctor is treating Neelix. The lighting makes his uniform look like a deep forest green is my note. Instead of that teal, it looks like a really dark forest green. I don't know.
Yes, I did notice that something about Neelix looked a little different. I have to say when we were in sick bay and the first injured crewmen start coming in. Everything seemed fine. And then, you know, basically fine. There was nobody. And then all of a sudden the door opens and like 25 crewmen come in with like carrying their friends. And the first thing I thought was, wow, all the injured people seem to walk very closely together because they're all just gathered outside of the door waiting for the first injured guy to go in. They all like, and then they came through and then there were no more injured people. It's like, wait, do they just huddle up and like walk down the hall, you know, as a group? Like, where are all the injured people? Come on, let's.
They were standing there and right outside of sick bay, it says sick bay hours. And it said the times and it wasn't that time for opening yet. And they're lined up. They're all in a queue and they were like, oh my God. Oh, it's time. It's open now. Let's go. And they all.
That's what it seemed like. It seemed like the store just opened. It was kind of, yeah, I thought, wow. And I normally think of this, but I was like, maybe they should have staggered these guys out a bit. Like, the first one comes in and maybe the door stays open and then a couple more come in. And then while they're talking, more people, but it was more like 25 people just kind of like minions.
Boop, boop, boop,
boop. They all came in anyway.
Yeah. It was like they were at a concert and they gang rushed the front, the front standing room only area.
Yeah.
So
lots of wounded and they like to walk together in groups. It's safe for that way.
Instead of the Walking Dead, the Walking Wounded is what it was, right? So, all right. Okay. By the good way, observation.
They also say damage on deck 15, section 29 alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Structural integrity is failing.
Yeah.
Did the writers track these decks, like the logic? Because I feel like we talk about deck 15 a lot in this series, like not just this episode.
That's a good question.
I feel like we've talked about, like, often when there's problems, deck 15 has really bad luck. It comes up a lot. I put this out to the fans, another homework assignment. Please let me know how many times there's trouble on deck 15, because I feel like it's almost always. Like, after a while, I'd be like, I'm not going to deck 15 because nothing good happens on deck 15, particularly section 29 alpha.
I can't wait till we have a writer on the show. They're just going to think that it's the Spanish Inquisition. All we're going to do is sit there, ask them questions. And what about deck tracking? Do you guys track the decks? Because 15 seems like the most dangerous of all decks. And we're just going to sit here and just ask them a billion questions because these are only questions that they can answer. So we should probably make a note of that. What is up with the decks? Where are you in your notes? Are you yet to my death scene yet? No.
No, not quite yet. I mean, Wildman's baby is dying. I'm there, and I just couldn't believe that was happening, and I couldn't believe that the baby died. Like, that to me, I was like, because I didn't remember this episode. So when the baby died, I didn't remember.
Oh wow!
That another baby was. I didn't remember. I was really caught up in this episode in every way. The story had me. The direction had me. I remember. I think I skipped something, but in engineering, at one point, Torres is confused as to what's happening and the camera went around her in a 360. And we didn't do that often on our Star Trek. We didn't do 360s because for the audience, a 360 is when the camera goes 360 degrees around in a circle around an actor or around some staging. We didn't do it often on Star Trek. It's not done often on a lot of shows because it's hard to do. You've got to clear out all of your equipment in every direction, you see in every direction, you have to light every direction. So it becomes a big job to do a shot like that. And I was really impressed that it communicated Torres's confusion and chaos in engineering in that earlier scene in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
Just one of many examples of David Livingston doing some really special and really smart directing and staging. So,
yeah, because that 360 had purpose.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because there are times that I'll watch a film or a TV project and the director will throw a 360 in there and I'll sit there and think, they only did it because in film school, they thought this was the coolest thing to do and they threw it into their project and it has no reason to be there. And it doesn't further the story. It doesn't really help the viewer understand anything. And I look at that and I scoff at it. I'm like, amateur, but, you know,
this one
meant something.
Torres, it meant something. It really
did.
It communicated the dramatic you know, emotional life of Torres in that moment.
Yeah.
It captured what she was feeling, which is everything spinning out of control. So
exactly.
I thought it was great. Now we're up to Harry's death scene. Yes.
We're here.
So
we're here.
Climbing into one thing I did notice too is those Jeffries tubes, you know, the ones that go up and down. So you were in some hallways, which we had sets. We had sets that went around to sort of an opening where there were ladders going up and down, but it really didn't go down because we were on the stage floor. There was nowhere to go down. So you could only go up from our hallway set. And then there was another Jeffries tube junction up above where you could go different directions in theory, but it was basically just a small little treehouse up above. And what I loved in the way that they shot it was you're going down a hall and then you got to that junction and you climbed down. Well, you had actually gone down from that elevated set. So it was another smart, you know, Livingston putting together a puzzle that felt three-dimensional and made the ship feel very authentic in a way that really when we're there filming and you know that these sets are much smaller and much more limited than it felt. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But Torres says, we've got to leave. And Harry is trying so hard to save everybody. And he goes, just one more minute. Just wait one second. So he sacrifices himself. He wants to save the ship. And he sacrifices himself. And there's a hull breach. And he's sucked into space. And I was like, what? I was kind of like, what the what? But it wasn't really what the what. It was something else. But it was a lot of what. You're sucked into.
No, what did you say? What did you really say?
I really was like, oh my God, I didn't remember that. And by the way, the effect looked really good. Did they put you on wires or something, or how they do it?
Yeah. I had wires. So so basically, you have these two. They're very thin wires, basically, right? And they kind of attach to, there's a harness or whatever that is underneath my Starfleet uniform. And then they cut a little hole on each side for the actual,
like the hip,
I guess it's sort of like a metal. Yeah. It's like a metal, little loop thing on each side that you attach each thin metal wire to, and that suspends you basically. So, right. So then, so just so people know, we had many, many Starfleet uniforms. It wasn't like, Robbie had one and that's all. I mean, we had ones that could cut into, like the one they use for this particular stunt, if you want to call it a stunt.
Yeah.
They have certain uniforms that have been, torn because of maybe a battle scene or whatever, being shot by a phaser or whatever. So, so this particular scene, yes, I had wires when I got sucked into space.
Yeah. It looked great. I thought the effect looked really good. It was very well done.
Yeah. We shot it multiple times. Like there was one where we shot it where I did a bunch of flips backwards, you know,
really?
And they were like, yeah, they didn't like that one. They were like, we don't like him flipping multiple times. So we wanted more stationary and just being
I liked,
out.
Yeah, you kind of got sucked away.
I was like,
a little sideways and
yeah,
just a little bit. Yeah. It was sadder. Yeah. It felt more real.
It was sad. And now I'm going to say one great thing about doing this rewatch is that for many years at convention appearances on stage, I've been telling different stories, and I talk about this death scene a lot, and I don't remember things as clear as I thought I did, because always talk about right after this happened that B'Elanna hits her comm badge, and she says, you know, she goes, you know, B'Elanna to Janeway, and Janeway says, go ahead. And then B'Elanna says, and this is what I say at the conventions, Harry's dead. And then cut back to Janeway, and Janeway goes,
what about Decade?
Like that, and that's what I say at conventions. Like, she goes literally from hearing the news of my death to ask about, is there damage on Decade? But in reality, if you watch this episode, B'Elanna goes, Ensign Kim is dead and Kes has disappeared.
Yeah.
And then Janeway goes,
disappeared.
Like, she didn't give a crap about that fact that I died. And I'm like, what?
Oh, you're right. I didn't think about that.
So this is kind of, for me, yes, it's the second time that Harry Kim dies. Harry dies in Emanations in season one in order to get back to Voyager. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, he dies. But I also call it my Rodney Dangerfield episode, my no respect episode. Because, come on. I mean, if literally after B'Elanna says to Janeway that Harry Kim is dead, there has to be a little bit more reaction on her. Instead of, she gave a look, and then she heard that Kes disappeared, and she's like, disappeared? Where? Disappeared? I mean, all she cared about was the disappearance of Kes, and it wasn't anything about, and then let's flash forward to the bridge when Tuvok is sitting there, and he's giving the whole 411 on what's going on. He's like, the decks are doing this. We have this many casualties and this and this and this.
It was a crazy list.
And then he says, he goes, I must also regretfully report. And he pauses, and I'm waiting for him to say something about me. And he goes, no, that Ensign Wildman's baby did not survive. And I'm like, what? You didn't even list Kim in that damage report, you bastard. How dare you?
But she already knew that. That was old news. That happened. That was old news.
No, he was doing a recap. So the recap must include my death as well. But he didn't do that.
It was a recap. You're right. It was a recap.
Right?
Yeah. Did he mention Kes disappearing?
I don't know. I have to go back. Maybe not.
I don't think so. I don't know.
You're making me feel a little bit better about it then.
I don't think it was a total recap. It was like new stuff that she wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
So that's why it wasn't in there.
I just felt like the other Ensign Kim at the end should have came on the ship and slapped both Tuvok and Janeway. Like that. That's for not caring about me. So anyway, but I now know that she said Ensign Kim is dead. And Kes has disappeared instead of Harry's dead. And I thought she said Harry's dead. She never says that. She says Ensign Kim is dead and Kes disappeared. So I can now correct my story.
Okay. And this is good that we're doing this.
It's very, very good.
Yeah. So this is where I had a note on the bridge. You know, things must be bad because Janeway's hair is a mess. Wanted to remind everybody of that.
Thank you.
Also, Paris seems particularly concerned about Janeway here. I felt a little bit of like, oh, Paris is trying to show a little sensitivity for Janeway's situation. He was very
really,
yeah. I felt like,
in what way?
Just showing some feelings for her. You know, I think if things had gone differently, maybe Janeway and Paris could have, you know, connected. I mean, he seemed to have a connection to her in that scene. He was concerned.
Older lady, younger man relationship. Yeah. Oh,
I just felt it. It was a little bit of, he was really worried about her, not just professionally, but like personally, you could tell. I forget the lines, but I remember making that note. Tuvok, this is where Tuvok lists all the damage somewhere after this. And it's so bad. And then when the bridge starts to collapse, and the strut falls and there's fire in front of the camera. I made a note. I'm like, this is the biggest like destruction we have ever seen on the ship at this point.
Up until this point, yes.
Up until this point, we had never. I was trying to remember. I do remember the rig.
Oh, no, wait, Robbie. No, in the pilot, when we get thrown into Delta Quadrant, there's destruction there too.
But not like that. We didn't see giant set pieces falling down. We didn't see fire that I recall. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think this feels the most dramatic kind of destruction on the ship that I've ever seen. The lights are going crazy and the fire and flames and there's smoke everywhere. I thought it was cool. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
As they evacuate, because things are falling apart, they're heading to engineering. Janeway sees she looks back, she sees a ghost crew on the bridge. And they're just, the ghost crew is kind of walking around calmly and
like nothing's going on. Like
nothing. And then she heads to the turbo lift, and then we jump to the other ship. Let's call it Voyager 2, for lack of a better term. We jump over to Voyager 2, and a perfectly fine bridge, calm bridge. Janeway looks back and she sees the ghost of herself walking. How? I don't understand how they saw each other in that moment. Is it explained? Or was it just a, like, nobody said, oh, there was a flux variance in the thing for one moment and that allowed us to see each other. I don't recall that. It was just like,
no.
Oh, she just happens to, at this moment, see the other bridge crew. Like, why didn't that continue to happen, I guess, is my point. Why couldn't they see each other more than just this one moment? That sort of...
And why is it only Janeway that sees that? Maybe she's psychic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like that was a little hole for me that could have been answered or used a little more. Although I love this episode, so I don't want to poke any holes in it.
Yeah.
But I did find that moment I was like, oh, now we're going to start to be able to kind of cross over and see each other. And that never really happened. It didn't really go anywhere.
Can we say that the ship that's unharmed is Voyager 1? Because if you're saying Voyager 2, you're going against the stance that you made that the Delta Flyers is going to use.
Let's go Voyager 1. Voyager 1 is the...
Voyager 1 is the...
Is now the new ship.
That's not in...
Yeah, the one that we're now starting to follow. Okay.
The pristine Voyager 1. Ship. Voyager 1. Uh-huh. The original ship. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Voyager 1. Okay.
All right.
And on Voyager 1, we see that Wildman's baby is fine. We learn... Mm-hmm. That Cass, when she disappeared off of Voyager 2, walked through that force field looking thing.
See, I don't remember Kes being in the same, Kes 1 and Kes 2 being in the same room. I don't remember that.
I remembered now. I was like, when we got to this, when we got to this, I remember it because I was shadowing David Livingston on this episode because it was such a tricky episode. And I was particularly interested in how they were going to shoot, like, the two Kesses in one room, two Janeways in one room.
Right.
And I remember there is a shot where Kes and the doctor, it's a two shot, Kes and the doctor, Kes is on the bed, and the doctor's talking to her. And then the doctor walks over to talk to Janeway, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues to walk forward and we pan over and there's another Kes. The way that they did this was Jennifer Lean was on the bed with a doctor. And then as the doctor moved over, we panned over to Janeway, Jennifer Lean ran around behind the camera to her new position. So when the doctor moved again, there was Jennifer Lean. So she literally, it seemed like there were two Kesses in the room. There was one Jennifer Lean. She ran behind the camera while it was panned off of her. And then it panned back onto her. And it did it again, going back the other way. And I had never seen a shot like that. And I was very impressed with it. And, you know, that kind of technical stuff, especially when I was shadowing, was really mind blowing to me. And it was very clever of David Livingston to do.
Was there no wide shot showing both Kesses together on screen at the same time then?
In that scene, Kes and the doctor were over with Lieutenant Wildman. And you saw some coverage. And then it pulled back as the doctor was talking. And that was a double of Kes standing. Right. So now you had seen her face, Jennifer Lean's face, but when we came behind her and started pulling back as the doctor continued talking, and then we panned over to the bed where Jennifer Lean was now in that shot. So it was a trick, the photo doubles back, pulling back to find Jennifer Lean in the foreground.
Gotcha.
Yeah, all of that stuff was very clever and very, very elegantly done. I thought David Livingston blocked this episode, staged it with the actors in a great way. There was a lot of movement, a lot of energy. There wasn't a lot of just standing around, which is the easy way to do things. And he didn't do it the easy way, for sure.
Right. I also think it's great that, you know, I just mentioned earlier before we started talking about this, how I don't recall the scene of the two Kesses together at all. Mm-hmm. And this falls in line with this, our podcast. Every time I don't remember something is a time that you've been shadowing and you're like, I remember it. So yeah. It's like, yay. So you're there to pick up the slack on that. So I thank you for that.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I usually when I shadowed, I wouldn't necessarily shadow the directors every single scene every single day, but
right,
I do remember being there for some of this, and I remember wanting to be there for some of that trickier stuff with the double character scenes where I wanted to see how they were going to shoot that stuff.
Hey, were you there for the two Janeways when they were talking back and forth to it, when they were face to face in engineering, were you there that day?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't remember it as well as the Jennifer Lean running behind the camera trick. Mm-hmm. That was a great trick that I've remembered when I've directed scenes like that on other shows. I've remembered that trick of kind of moving actors, behind the camera as you choreograph and block the scene. I do remember the scene in engineering with Janeway. They had a great photo double that she looked in that wide shot. I think it was the photo double and Kate, and they just looped in Kate speaking, but she was a very good photo double, almost.
Oh, good.
I don't remember who it was, but she was really good. And then in the close-up scene, I do remember they shot one side of that on the set and another part of that on a green screen.
That makes sense
to put them together.
Yeah,
I thought that was less effective for me because they looked a little too close. I think I made a note of it later on.
Yeah,
it looked oddly. Those shots are always hard to do to make the actor's eyes focused in the right place.
The eye line was a little bit off, definitely, and they were a little bit too close. Correct.
Yeah, Harry saves the day again. I just got to say, we could rig a portable phase discriminator. It might protect you from the spatial transition, he says later on. So again, he's saving the day in this episode. He sacrificed himself. It's a good episode for
portable you. Portable phase discriminator. I like that.
Yeah.
It was
I also liked when the doctor said to Kes, trying to reassure her in sickbay, he goes, "Don't worry, Kes. I'm sure your ship is equipped with an emergency medical hologram too. You'll be okay." It's like, oh dude, you're funny.
So cocky.
God, they give him such great lines.
They do.
And right around here is where they all realize that there are two Voyagers and two crews. And they decide the answer is to merge the two ships, which I thought was crazy. That just seems crazy. How are you going to?
And it is crazy because it doesn't work.
No, right? It doesn't work.
It didn't work. They tried. It ended up pulling it further apart is what it was.
Yep. Further out of phase now. Yeah.
But you got to try.
Got to. So Janeway one, let's call her the okay ship. Janeway decides she's going to come over to Voyager two.
Yep.
The breaking apart Voyager. So Janeway's going to cross over. And I love when she walks into engineering and you see her and then it whip pans over to a close-up of the other Janeway. Again, a simple technique, but David Livingston did a great job at shooting these scenes where you had two of the same character in one scene. That whip pan entrance was very energetic and shocking and fun and felt very, exactly the right shot to tell the story at that moment.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That was good.
And we talked about when they walk up to the balcony and they have a little conversation up there. And Janeway 1 says, "I understand, Janeway 2, that you want to destroy this thing. Just give me 15 minutes. Give me 15 minutes to try to think of another thing." And I thought as she's saying that, I'm like, oh, I see where this is going. She's going to go destroy. Janeway 1's going to destroy her ship because she knows the other Janeway is willing to do it. So I thought she's tricking her or something. Which turned out not to be how the story went because the Vidians show up and geez, the Vidians take over fast.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed about that. I mean, the first person to get shot is Tuvok, our head of security. It's sort of like, shouldn't he have been the last guy to be taken down? I mean, he should have been the most able to withstand an alien attack.
Yeah.
Right, but no, he gets shot. And then we see you. I remember how you talked about when we did our deep dive episode, you talked about running. You're like, what? I just don't get running. And then in this scene,
and then you
have to run.
Why I
and
don't get running.
Yeah, you weren't really into running that much like in that scene.
Well, part of it is, you know, they're pushing a dolly, just so everybody in the audience knows. The hallways were carpeted, so they pushed a regular dolly, which is pretty heavy. It's a heavy thing, and it can't go that fast.
Yeah.
And so whenever you're doing those scenes, they always say, hey, yeah, run and fire behind you, but don't run 100%. Run like 70% of what you would really run. So you're like, because they can't keep up with you because they're pushing a dolly.
Correct.
So you're like, okay, if I run 70%, I'm going to look like I'm just sort of loping along. I don't know. It's just, yeah, it was bad. I had to shoot, and then I had to duck because somehow out of the back of my, the eyes in the back of my head, somehow I knew the guy behind me was about to fire. I mean, it was like, it was so choreographed. Yeah. Like I shoot, you shoot, I shoot again. Yeah. And I run like a lope. Yeah. It was not my favorite.
It was very Broadway musical. Like,
thank you
to me.
I felt like I should have been like jazz hands or something.
Jazz hands. Yes. And then you get shot in the back and you go down. And that's
I died too, though.
But you do die. Yes.
I forgot. I didn't know that I died in this episode. Everybody dies.
And hours.
You die.
Hours. It's like an episode of Oprah, right? You die and then you die. You get a death.
Everybody gets a car.
You get a death. You get a death. Yes. That's right. And you, when you died, that was mere hours after my death, or maybe just minutes after my death. Really?
There's a lot of death.
Joined me
episode.
Mm-hmm.
The Vidians were badasses. They were pretty cool.
Are you at the mess hall? Sorry, you at the sick bay scene where I come in with the baby yet?
I am. And I was very moved. I mean, it was very moving. It really was. Rebecca was like, I'm tearing up. This is really emotional. And I love the
I didn't like my no. I didn't like my no. When I came up upon the little incubator thing and the baby's gone, and I went, no, I did kind of, and I kept thinking, why would I be that loud? I'm going to like give away my position. I should have been more internal. I think I should have went, no. It should have been a silent or whispered no. You see what I'm saying? Because the Vidians are everywhere, right? So, but then again, I guess Harry's caught up in the moment because his mission has failed in his mind. Right. He's like, dang it. I came here to get the baby. The baby's already gone. You know, so maybe that's why I had the bigger no.
You probably also had a bigger no because you had just fired a phaser at a Vidian, jump rolled and fired another phaser. I mean, I don't know that you had to jump roll. I felt like you were being a little flashy with your.
I chose to do that. You know that, right?
No, I didn't.
You don't know that. Yeah. So what happened? This is what happened. Was David Livingston said, he was like, okay, we're gonna block this scene. Okay, Garrett, you come in through the door, you're gonna shoot this one Vidian, and then just turn and shoot this other guy. I'm like, wait a minute, that other guy is gonna see me shooting the first Vidian. He's gonna do something and shoot at me. Why don't I jazz this up a little bit by kind of dodging it and doing a front roll? And in actuality, they were supposed to make that effect so that as I'm front rolling, that's how I dodge the phaser fire. But instead, they made it so that the Vidian missed me kind of high. You see what I'm saying? And I front roll. But the front roll is supposed to happen as a way of dodging the Vidian fire. So
That would have been better.
Visual effects sort of screwed up on that. And so when I said, let me just kind of zhuzh it up, David says, well, what do you have in mind? I said, I'm going to front roll. I didn't say zhuzh. I said, let me Jackie Chan this, is what I said to him. I said, let me Jackie Chan this scene. And he said, okay. So I showed him in rehearsal. He goes, great, let's do that. And so that's how that came in.
Oh,
there.
Wow.
And if you think I was showing off a little bit, well, yes, indeed I was. Yeah.
That's funny.
I liked it.
I thought it was great. I felt like last week when I did my own stunts and bounced off a bed and rolled on the ground, I was like, Tom Paris last week did a little roll. And now look at Harry King doing his.
See?
Yeah. It was
following you. What did you say Rebecca said about that scene? You said something about
she was very emotional when all of it, the whole ending sequence. It was very very emotional.
If you think about it, these are the characters that all the fans have grown to love over the two seasons, and now we have a scene where the Vidians are boarding the ship and every single series regular is being killed.
Yeah.
Harvested, right? I mean, it's very emotional. So it's sort of like, oh my God, you know? But I just love the ending scene when they end up on the bridge and both Chakotay and Janeway are just calm as calm can be, you know? Yeah. And she just stands up and she's like— and
they look over, they see the self-destruct.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. It was a good explosion too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It would have been cool to see Janeway say something a little bit more snarky, you know? Was like welcome to the bridge, mofos, like that, or like, time to die, or something like that. But she didn't. She was classy.
She was very classy. She was also very classy at the very end, the last line of the episode, when she says the wise words to Harry Kim. She says, "Harry, we're Starfleet officers. Weird is part of the job." I was like, "That's so funny." That was her last words of wisdom.
Which throws into my theme for this episode.
Oh, yeah?
Weird is part of the job.
I feel like we should have some merchandising that has weird as part of the job. We are Starfleet officers.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
So my theme really is sort of weird is part of the job, but also to expect the unexpected. Mm. Because as you watch this episode, the thought process is Voyager 2, damaged Voyager, is going to be the self-destruct Voyager, but they don't become the self-destruct. They're the ones that survive. It's the totally pristine Voyager that has to enter the self-destruct sequence, so that, you know, you never know which way life is going to turn. So always expect the unexpected so that you're not surprised. So that is the theme that I got. If you have another one, please chime in on that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, my theme was more about sort of like that there's really only, it comes back to kind of your question to me early on of, you know, which is the real Voyager, which is the copy? Mm-hmm. I felt like the theme of this episode was there is only one true version of who you are. And it doesn't die. It can't be copied. There's only one, like there is a essential truth that always will be there, no matter what, living or dead, or, you know, after we're long gone, there is still an essential truth about who we are. And there's only one true you, I guess, is really, there's only one true version of all of us in the episode, all the characters in the episode.
Okay.
That was sort of my takeaway. That was my theme there.
Good.
Yeah, great. Well, I love this episode. It's one of my favorites we've watched so far. And I got to say, I did not remember a thing about it until we watched it. And then so much came pouring back, but it was really fun to watch. And I'm glad that Harry One decided to come join the Voyager 2 gang. And it was great. It was really great.
Thumbs up.
Give it a big thumbs up.
Okay. Thanks, guys, for tuning in for this week. And join us next week when we review the episode Innocence. Next week.
See you then.